This is a true crime roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We explore crime stories reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. This week, we have updates into the Nolan Wells death investigation. Wells was an 18-year-old whose body was found after he went missing while partying on Horn Island in Mississippi for July 4th. His death has been met with rumors, conspiracy theories, and questions about race. Scoot from Odyssey station WWL in New Orleans has been following the story, and he put together a timeline this week that we'll share in this episode. Also in this episode, we'll look into recent developing crime stories around the country, from a man who was arrested near President Donald Trump's golf course to a teenager in a clown costume arrested on murder charges. First up is a report from Odyssey station KNX News in Los Angeles about the man who had a loaded weapon in his car and was arrested over the weekend after investigators with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department said he was taking videos and photos at Trump National Golf Club in Rancho Palos Verdes.
Then there's this arrest of federal weapons charges being filed against a man who was arrested near the golf course, the president's course, over the weekend. He's expected in court sometime today. Sheriff's Department, Secret Service, looking into his background. He's from Downey. Here's Pete Demetrio.
The man in custody, 38-year-old Janine Taylor, was spotted at Trump National Golf Course by Secret Service advance team members on Saturday morning. Captain Calvin Maas with the L.A. Sheriff's Major Crimes Bureau.
He's kind of walking around the grounds. It didn't appear that he was there for any type of legitimate business. And then they called in the local sheriff's department, which was Lomita. Deputies responded, contacted, detained the individual. And during the detention, they realized that he had an extended magazine, which was illegal, on his person. A subsequent search of his vehicle produced another firearm, some binoculars, and things of that nature that made it seem that he wasn't there for a legitimate purpose.
A search of Taylor's home turned up a short-barreled AR-style rifle, a pistol, numerous high-capacity magazines, a large quantity of ammunition, body armor, and at least two radio devices that can be used to jam transmissions, and journals with some disturbing comments written in them. As of now, Taylor's been charged with state weapons violations, but the Secret Service is still not saying if he posed a threat to the president or if he was working with anyone else who may have been planning a potential attack on the event. I'm Pete Demetrio, KNX News.
In Chicago, Odyssey station WBBM News Radio reported on the trial of a woman charged in the killing of police.
Jury selection is scheduled to begin in Kankakee County for the trial of Zandria Harris. She's charged in the 2021 killing of Bradley Police Sergeant Marlene Ritmanick and the critical wounding of Officer Tyler Bailey. The officers were responding to a barking dog complaint at a hotel when they were shot. Prosecutors accuse Harris of helping disarm Ritmanick before her then-boyfriend Darius Sullivan fired the fatal shots. He's already serving life in prison. Rachel Pearson, News Radio, 105.9 WBBM.
WBBM also reported on another woman facing serious charges this week.
In November 2020, the DuPage County State's Attorney says Rosa Lagrone suspected her boyfriend Darnell Manns was dating another woman, so she shot Manns in their Naperville home and then did a live video chat with the alleged other woman while Manns was seen on the floor in a pool of blood. Manns died a few days later. This year, a jury found Lagrone guilty of first-degree murder, and a judge just sentenced Lagrone to 38 years in prison. Roger Plummer, News Radio, 105.9 WBBM.
In Philadelphia, a murder conviction might soon be overturned. Let's hear about it from Odyssey station KYW News Radio.
Philly DA Larry Krasner says his office will appeal a judge's decision to overturn the first-degree murder conviction of the man found guilty of killing Officer Moses Walker 14 years ago. KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson joins us live with the latest. Kristen?
Yeah, Matt, the hearing happened yesterday, and we did ask Larry Krasner about it, who didn't say anything about it. But today he was flanked by both the mother of Moses Walker, the police officer who died more than a decade ago, and by the president of the FOP. And he says that he will appeal the overturned murder conviction of Raphael Jones, who was the accused shooter in this case.
If the appellate courts disagree, we will be retrying this case. We have a lot of evidence to do so, and we will be retrying it vigorously.
So yesterday, Judge Jennifer Schultz ruled that because a former homicide detective, Philip Nordo, who has been convicted of sexually assaulting witnesses, was tied to this case as part of a confession, one of Jones's confessions to the crime. It could have altered the defense's strategy in this case, but that confession was actually never used at trial. So that's where they believe that there is a case here where they can appeal to the Superior Court. Krasner says, obviously, that they're going to appeal to both the Superior Court and the Supreme Court level, and they are confident about that because they believe that they have a mountain of evidence. I should mention here that Moses Walker's mother, Winaya Walker, who was present, talked about her son a lot and actually said that today would have been his 55th birthday.
KYW also provided an update on the murder of a rec center employee that rocked the nearby community around 4 years ago.
A third defendant gets sentenced in the murder of a Philadelphia rec center employee nearly 4 years ago. KYW's John McDevitt reports.
Prosecutors say in September of 2022, two groups of juveniles were involved in a shootout outside the Mill Creek Rec Center. Rec Center employee Tiffany Fletcher was caught in the crossfire. She was shot in the torso and later died. Tiffany's mother, Geraldine, was at the sentencing of one of the defendants, Tevin Key, where the 21-year-old apologized to the victim's family.
They take a human body like it's nothing, but God created that body. Well, her body is his temple. She's with him now.
Assistant District Attorney Jeff Konjowski.
Mr. Key did enter an open or non-negotiated guilty plea to murder to third degree, conspiracy to commit murder to third degree, and two firearm offenses.
He was sentenced to 12 and a half to 25 years in prison, which is consistent with his co-defendant sentences. Mackie Jones and Malik Flagler pled guilty in 2024 to third-degree murder. They were sentenced to 10 to 25 years and 12 and a half to 25 years in prison, respectively. Since the murder, the Mill Creek Rec Center's name has been changed to honor the victim. It's now the Tiffany Fletcher Rec Center. John McDevitt, KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
Another case KYW reported on this week involves a man on trial for allegedly killing his wife.
Her disappearance went unsolved for years. Now her husband is about to go on trial. Alan Gould is accused of killing his wife, Anna Macieska, who vanished from their Malvern, Chester County home back in 2017. Investigators have never found her body. Her family says that while she was looking into divorce, she never would have abandoned her son. Gould was charged last year with first-degree murder. His lawyers say after years of innuendo, Mr. Gould is looking forward to the opportunity to clear his name in court. He's set to appear for a pretrial hearing today. His trial is set to begin in a week.
And KYW also reported on a deadly roadway incident in Newark, New Jersey.
A Delaware man has been charged with murder after fatally shooting a motorcyclist during a road rage incident in Newark, KYW's John McDevitt reports.
According to Delaware State Police, occupants of a Hyundai Elantra got into a verbal altercation with a man on a motorcycle at the intersection of Salem Church Road and Old Baltimore Pike in Newark. Officials say 46-year-old Jason Paletti, a bear, was shot and killed when he got off his bike at the intersection and reached for something in a saddlebag. What he was reaching for is not being disclosed by police right now. Investigators say it was 28-year-old William Simpler Jr. of St. George's, Delaware, who allegedly fired the fatal shot. Simpler was in the front passenger seat. The suspect was tracked down at his residence, where he was taken into custody without incident. Simpler was charged with murder first degree and possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. John McDevitt, KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
Odyssey station KMOX in St. Louis reported on a case involving a teen in a clown costume.
Good for you.
A 15-year-old seen in viral video wearing a clown costume now formally charged with first-degree murder in East St. Louis. That's the sound from a Ring camera. Court documents show St. Clair County prosecutors charged the teenager in juvenile court for the fatal stabbing of 78-year-old John Allen. They're seeking to try the teen as an adult. Police found Allen's body in the street near 76th and State Monday night before tracking down the teenager and collecting that doorbell footage of him in costume.
In Pittsburgh, Marty Griffin of Odyssey station KDKA Radio reported on a shooting incident in the city that happened last Sunday and about efforts to reduce crime.
I want to play this clip. There was a homicide last night in the Strip District. Listen to this. Listen.
7th Street and Liberty Avenue. We got a female shot there waiting on actor information. She said she was attacked at her car and then the suspect shot her.
250 on the hill.
11 copy.
Responding, the female's going to be shot in the face. We got all the medics rolling. Actor's going to be the one that called in. She's on scene. Female approached her at her car and the caller shot her in the face. There's lots of screaming going on in the background. We have no additional information.
211, we're coming into the area.
Copy.
It's unbelievable.
From the gate 27th and Liberty is the intersection.
252 base, medics are code 3 on this, correct?
I'll see where they're at. Code 4 on scene for them.
From medic 6, we're at 28th Street.
280. We haven't done so. Can we get mobile crime and VTU page up?
All right, thanks. That was a homicide. My man, Mike Fisher, Pittsburgh scanner. Wow, sounds like the way it's presented, brother, self-defense case almost, right?
Marty, that's probably, if I were to be the defense, I would go that way. I would say this would be self-defense, but the burden of proof is on the person who pulls the trigger.
Now, Mike is very intuitive about what's happening in the city because it's his game, and he's the pro. We don't get a lot of homicide calls in Pittsburgh, and I want to throw these numbers out there. Last year, 35-year low in homicides, 35 recorded cases. How about that? And the clearance rate, 70% for all cases and 91% when you include older cases. And by the way, regionally, Allegheny County, 40% drop in homicides, an 18-year low. Mike, we talk about violence a lot in this show with teens, in robberies, in drugs, in overdoses, but it appears as if homicides, we have them under control, sir. It appears that way.
Maury, like you said a lot earlier in the show, it's life is what matters, and after all the investments and speaking about it, seems like something's happening that's paying off, and I think that's a good trend.
I do, too. My man, Mike, thanks, brother.
Thanks for having me.
He's the best. Look, there have been years where we had 100. There have been years where we had well over 100. I wanted to get to some of my notes from one of my insiders. They averaged more than 50 a year since 1999. So last year, to have 35. And trending for the same number this year says a couple things. Number one, yes, we have a depleted police department. Yes, we're a couple hundred officers short. Yes, we could use more cops. But they seem to have their arms wrapped around homicide. And their clearance rate on old cases is insane, 91%. Sattler, homicide. Badass at clearing cold cases that no one thought could be solved. I wanted to mention this in the context of how this show is framed sometimes. I get criticized for suggesting that downtown is a hell zone. Downtown is horrible. No. We point out problems downtown that need to be addressed. We shine a light on issues downtown that can be fixed. But it would be irresponsible of me to suggest that this city is doing a hell of a job regarding homicide.
Griffin also discussed a type of crime that's been claiming lives, sextortion. Here he's referencing cases around Peters Township and Mount Lebanon in Pennsylvania.
I wanted to play this piece that Tamara put together. It's so significant and so important. And this sort of thing is happening in real time to our kids. And I've seen it. Patrick has seen it. I know cops who are investigating it and lawyers who are freaked out about it. And parents need to know. Listen to this piece tomorrow put together. Listen.
Police allege 23-year-old Charles Ezekiel Ushner of Mount Lebanon communicated with a 15-year-old boy, drove him to Peters Lake Park for a sexual encounter last July, and recorded it on the teen's cell phone. The Observer reporter first reported Ushner's charges as investigators say they discovered the video while looking into former Peters Township High School student Zachariah Myers, who is accused of blackmailing classmates with explicit images. Ushner faces multiple felony charges and is being held in the Washington County Jail on $500,000 cash bond, pending an August 17th preliminary hearing. Tamira Rush, News Radio KDKA.
That is so timely. So my kids, my whole family, well, we live in Mount Lebanon. And my daughter, let me get to this. My daughter said that this guy who got busted went to Mount Lebanon. How about that? And this sextortion stuff, ma'am, this is the third person charged in this sextortion case. Catfishing scheme. And this is real. I have a couple of police sources. They haven't investigated active cases in Mount Lebanon. So everybody thinks Mount Lebanon's perfect and Peters is perfect and everybody's rich and white and in a bubble and in mansions and Mercedes. That's fine. But this is actually real world in real time. So let me tell you what happens. And Patrick can jump in because he knows this very well too. So these guys, well, go ahead, Patrick, kind of describe how this plays out and why this is so damn evil. Go ahead.
Boy, it's awful. They prey on these kids. The local case, there were videos in person as well. So, yep. And then they take them and they blackmail them. So they hold it over them and blackmail them for cash and other things. Threaten to expose them to their family, their friends, and completely hold it over their heads.
So what happens, and we've seen this with suicide. AI. So these yes. chatbots pose as, quite frankly, hot young girls. And they're so real that the boys, teenage boys, fall into this. And the relationship they think they have, and by the way, there have been a number of suicides as a result of this. They'll ask them for pictures of their privates. Now, you would think, oh my God, I would never do that, neither would my kid. Okay. But when you're young and you're kind of enamored and this is kind of cool and kind of attractive, this happens every damn day. And so what happens is these teenage boys send these private pictures of their private parts and they think they're sending it to a young girl who loves them. Then what happens, Patrick? Crazy.
Well, yeah, then they want cash from them or Bitcoin or whatever type of currency that they're looking for. They want that to keep them from distributing it to your family and friends and exposing you. And it's becoming more and more common.
All
and
over the country.
I have an older family member who got hit. Someone who's in their 60s.
Whoa.
Hit by this from someone online.
What happened? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They were on a dating site and exchanged some racy pictures. Then the person comes back and threatens to, send her pictures and to all of her family members through her Facebook contact list.
Wow.
Yeah. It's why you got to lock your social media down too.
Mm. And what happens is, and I mentioned this because it's true. Everybody in Mount Lebanon and Peters, oh, we're different. We're special. Okay. But this is happening right now in our backyard. And it's happening more than most people want to know, Patrick. Is it not?
It is. And it's happening every day. And now it's a combination of live human people doing this. It's AI chat bots and other things doing it. People overseas. All the above. You have to be aware and you have to talk to your kids about this. And frankly, you got to talk to your seniors about it now, too.
Hey, Just think of this when you were that age, how sensitive you are. So what happens to some of these kids, and you don't want to believe this, but it's true. They kill themselves. Because what happens is these cons expose themselves and say, here's what we're going to do. We're going to send these pictures of your private parts everywhere, unless you send us whatever, $1,000. And they get worked up and they take their lives. It's that dangerous, Patrick, is it not?
It absolutely is. Well, you think back to when you were that age.
Right on.
Your world is very small.
Right
and
on.
To think that everything around you is closing in, I can see how these kids would go there. And it's awful that somebody would take advantage of them like this.
Hey, folks, this scenario in Peters is even darker than that. I mean, the guy running this was the class president, for God's sakes, and had a lot of young men as part of this network of sextortion. And in this case, with this man who went to Mount Lebanon High School, according to my daughter, it's absolutely heinous and dangerous and scary as hell and frightening. And in this case, this guy sexually assaulted a 15-year-old boy and met him in a park. But in the Peters case, at one point, there were 400 counts. 400. It's bad, and it's dangerous as hell. Wall Street Journal did a piece on four athletes, students, straight A's, boys, teenagers, who got sucked into these sextortion schemes and took their own lives. What am I trying to tell you? I sat down with my son, Vince. He just turned 16 yesterday. My wife sat down, and we weren't overbearing about it. We certainly weren't freaked out about it. And when I was with him alone, because dads and boys and that thing, I said, look, my man, I was your age once. I liked a lot of girls. We used to go and hide, and this is the truth. We'd go hide in the woods near our house and look at a Playboy book like it was a big friggin' deal. And I told my son, Vince, I said, the landscape has changed, as you know. It's all there. It's all there in front of you. It's all accessible immediately. And I've got to ask you to promise me you will never, ever, ever exchange pictures of your private parts with anyone, ever. I'm not judging. I try and do this stuff. Isn't easy, obviously. My father and mother never had to experience this kind of thing. God bless them. And I said, my man, I'm not judging you. You're a 16-year-old boy. But there's a lot of porn out there. There's a lot of bad things out there. Don't allow anyone to ask you for anything like that personal, and don't ever, ever allow anyone to scare you into giving them money. I said, son, there is nothing you can do that would make me punish you for just coming to dad and telling him the truth. There's just nothing. And I mentioned that a couple kids from Mount Lebanon were involved, and that's where he's in school right now. And then our daughter Chloe mentioned that this kid who just got arrested, this man, went there. And it's that close to home. Do yourself a favor. Whether it's your grandkids, your own kids, your nephew, your nieces, someone, please talk to someone, especially teenage boys, because this is real and it's happening right now, as you know. The sextortion stuff is real, man. It's not TV hype, not social media hype. It's real. There's a case. Well, that was a case in Mount Lebanon. They've had other active cases. There are a significant number of cases in Peters, Upper St. Clair. I'm just telling you, ma'am. I'm not telling you to annoy your teenagers. I'm not. I'm telling you to just check in on your boys, especially with this sort of thing.
This week in Buffalo, WBEN News and Talk spoke with former priest James Faluzak about other cases involving sexual exploitation claims.
We really have been zeroing in on the claims against Buffalo priest Joseph Gatto. This board said that there was no connection between Gatto and Canisius High School student Devin Waring's death by suicide back in 2017. But a lot of people are still wondering who exactly to trust. What was your reaction when you saw this yesterday?
Good morning, Brian, and good morning, Buffalo. My initial reaction was that I wasn't surprised that Father Gatto was returned to ministry. It seems to me that the case really hinges upon whatever was discussed in that confession between Gatto and the former Canisius student. And all Gatto had to do was simply say that it was confessional material, that he couldn't talk about it. The church, the independent review board, the bishop would not have tried to tread on that in any way. It's considered off limits to talk about anything that happened in confession. And the mother of this boy spoke eloquently in the federal court in the bankruptcy proceeding, and Bishop Fisher heard her testimony and called for the investigation. That's all laudable and certainly courageous on the mom's part. But really, it underlines the fact that confessional secrecy can be an impediment to ever knowing what really happened in this case. We just don't know.
We don't know is how you're taking this. I think a lot of people are looking at who to trust. This review board, it's kind of, well, maybe unknown to a lot of people. Who makes up this review board, and why should people trust their findings?
Well, first of all, there's nothing independent about this review board. It is appointed by the Bishop of Buffalo, and this retired Buffalo police detective who was hired by the diocese to investigate this case was on the payroll of the diocese in order to conduct her investigation. She reached out to me about a month ago and asked me whether I would cooperate in their investigation. And I took a minute to think about it, but immediately said, yes, of course I would. She was reaching out to me because they had in their file a letter that I had written to Bishop Richard Malone stating the fact that I had revealed my allegation against Gatto to my home bishop back in 2014 when I left ministry. I subsequently wrote a letter to Malone. I subsequently wrote a letter to Pope Francis asking him to consider my allegation against Gatto. And all of that was ignored. None of that was ever followed up on until this police detective reached out to me, but then she didn't follow up. That was only the first of four allegations against Father Joseph Gatto. And this boy who committed suicide after confession was the fourth. And it just seems really unreasonable to me that we would call any of this independent.
You know, I want to ask, there's been no decision made on Gatto's next assignment, but, you know, this has happened in a lot of cases where there's been an accusation or two or something like this where the priest is removed, but then depending on what is found, whether it's by this review board or somebody else, the priest may return to ministry. And, you know, we've even seen this in the case of former Bishop Malone, where he has return to preside over some certain ceremonies, confirmations, things like that. I mean, as a former priest yourself, does there come a point where you would look at this and say, you know what, there's too much here for me to be able to do the work I need to, you know, even regardless if you believe these accusations to be false, at some point it has to become untenable.
Really what it comes down to is that neither the review board or its investigators or the bishops who have impaneled it up to this point have been trustworthy. And you say untenable, it's essentially that. And my heart goes out to the good people in the pews who are practicing their faith every Sunday and many of them every day in church, who really can't understand that this cover-up continues to go on.
Now we'll look into what happened to Nolan Wells. It's a question that people are asking all over the country after the young black athlete was found dead near a Gulf Coast island amid July 4th festivities. By this point, it's been weeks since he's been found, and the case seems as mysterious as ever. Here's Scoot from Odyssey Station WWL in New Orleans with an update this week.
So here is some new information on the Nolan Wells case. Nolan Wells was found off the coast of Horn Island. Horn Island has one side and the Mississippi Sound. The other side is the Gulf of Mexico. So Nolan was with friends on July 4th. This was a big blowout on Horn Island. I did not know this, but I've learned this from this story, that Horn Island is, you know, I knew this. It's uninhabited. There's nobody there. But I didn't realize that so many people went to Horn Island, and I guess that's why they go. But Horn Island is apparently usually populated with a lot of boats. Depending on the boat and the water conditions, it's a 20 to a 60-minute ride out to Horn Island. Now, Ship Island has a big concession stand. I don't know what they have added. I haven't been there in years, but I used to love taking the excursion boat out to Ship Island. But Horn Island is one of the islands just off the coast of the Gulf Coast where there's nothing. But people go there to party, and they park their boats and they all get together. So this 18-year-old Nolan Wells was part of this, you know, last hurrah on July 4th weekend before the students were going to have to start reporting to college soon. So he was with his friends on July 4th, and apparently he wanted to go talk to a girl, and he said, I will find a way home. The three friends that he was with left, and they went back to, you know, the Gulf Coast. So he is on the island, and nobody seems to know exactly what happened on July 4th, but he at some point disappeared. And his body was found 2 days later off the coast of Horn Island. So I'm bringing you up to date if you have missed this this whole story. One thing that has made me curious is why there's such a delay in releasing autopsy information from the Mississippi State Medical Examiner's office. Are they protecting somebody? And here's something that complicates matters. Nolan Wells is African American. His three friends were white. You know, when you think about young people today, and I don't know, maybe you have no contact with young people at all, but younger generations just seem to blend together. It like race doesn't seem to be a big deal to them like it was to boomers growing up. And I mean, I had an African American friend at East Jefferson. He was one of my close friends there. And you know, I'm sorry that I'm not in contact with him today. Because, you know, we went our separate ways and that was it. But as you know, I love flying, soloed when I was 16, and I wasn't able to continue for a couple of reasons, but I love flying, and I would have loved to have become an airline pilot. And Glenn, my friend at East Jefferson, his goal in life was to become an airline pilot. So, you know, we had that in common. He was a good guy. But the Mississippi State Medical Examiner's Office seems to be reluctant to release some official autopsy information. And the information that came out from an independent study from the family was that they don't know how he died. Now, do the Mississippi examiners know? I don't know. But here's the timeline. This is some new information that we know. This is according to documents that were obtained by ABC News. Now, Christine, Nolan's mom, reported her son missing at 12:22 a.m. on July 5th. Last time she saw him was July 3rd. So he goes off. So now it's July 5th and she hasn't heard from her son. At 12:22 in the morning on July 5th, she's responding to officers saying that she was responding to the call that she made about her son being missing. And apparently friends said that they last saw him at 3 p.m. on July 4th. So this is when, at 3 p.m. on July 4th, this is when his friends apparently went back to the Gulf Coast shore, and they didn't see him again. So apparently nobody had seen him, or we don't know of anybody having seen him. GPS data from the boat that Nolan Wells rode on with his friends to Horn Island shows that the boat left the island at 9:56 a.m. on July 4th, and arrived at the shore at 11:14 a.m. So that's like 10 o'clock in the morning on July 4th. So what time did they get to Horn Island? I mean, it's pretty early for them to be leaving Horn Island at like essentially 10 o'clock on the morning of July 4th. So, you know, this is what we know. But what we're missing is, like, who saw him last and at what point did he disappear? Or did something happen that caused him to no longer be in contact with people? So, you know, I'm a little curious still about why the state of Mississippi is withholding information. One of the reasons they gave was because they wanted to protect the information for the grand jury and that this is not that unusual. But it seems like we should know more. In particular, we should know, I think, by this point, if somebody drowned. It doesn't seem like it's that difficult. I mean, what I've read based on doing research for this story is that after 2 or 3 days, you should have pretty concrete evidence as to whether or not somebody drowned. And then there would be further research and testing that would be done that might take weeks. But you know, there should be more information out, in my opinion. And I don't know if the state of Mississippi is protecting people. This is what we don't know. And this is why a lack of information just screams out that there's something wrong with this case. And as you know, in the beginning, I thought, I just don't see how racism is part of this. I don't see how this is a factor because, as I was saying, you know, younger generations, they just blend together. They don't think about race the way we do. I see many more mixed couples among young people than I do among other generations. So race to them is not as big a deal as it is to older people. That's a shame that it's still a big deal to a lot of older people, but apparently it still is. So I'm curious as to why we don't know more at this point. And I just hope they let us know something soon. And it's accurate information that really helps the family. This is really about the family. You know, the rest of us want to know because we're voyeuristic and we just, you know, we're curious about what happened. But the family needs to know for their own ability to have closure in this case. No results are going to bring their son back, which is tragic and sad, but they need to know. If you want to join us with a comment, and look, if you're listening along the Gulf Coast, WLOX is doing a good job of covering this.
Scoot took a pause to address some text messages from listeners about the Nolan Wells case. Here's his co-host, Ian Hoke.
Here's a text message that says, the three white friends shown with him in the picture were not the ones that he went out with. Nolan went out on another boat, and there were way more than towed an actual text that he sent to Christine, Nolan's mother.
Wait, and so he was in...
I think something's missing here.
Yeah, he was in...
The first sentence is the most important one. The three white friends shown with him in the picture are not the ones that he went out with. Nolan went out on another boat.
Right. Well, we know that. I mean, yeah, we know that he didn't go back with his friends that he went there with. And I don't think that's suspicious. You know, I mean, the guy might have met somebody. You know, you just kind of make contact with somebody. You know what it's like. And you make contact with somebody and you kind of want to hang out with them. So his friends were leaving. And the timeline, which is new to me, the timeline shows that they left at 9:56 in the morning on the 4th of July. They left Horn Island at 9:56 to go back, arriving at 11:14. So he went off on his own, apparently, to be with this girl. So, yeah, we know that.
Here's a text that says, you're forgetting about how Nolan Wells' mom had to track down Nolan's phone from friends. They were hiding it.
Yeah, you know, they apparently were. And that is really suspicious. So why were they hiding the phone? Now, it's not unusual for Nolan's phone to have been in the boat with the guys, because when you're on an island like that and you're in the water, you're in the sand, where do you put your phone? You just put your phone in the boat. So the fact that he forgot his phone was in the boat and the boat left with his phone, that's not that suspicious. But what is suspicious is just the way the phone apparently was handled, as far as we know. And again, there's so much we don't know.
So, Scoot decided to go over the entire timeline of the case through this Thursday. Here's what he's got so far, heavily based on reporting from WLOX and edited down a little bit by me.
You know, just now in the crosstalk with Newell about the show, I said we'll talk about that. We'll do a timeline on the murder of Nolan Wells. Well, obviously, I misspoke. I in my heart, I don't think this was murder. In my heart, I did misspoke. That you know, we're not approaching it from that standpoint at all. I believe that just something happened. But maybe something happened in such a way that it doesn't look good for some people. But I have a lot of questions, as do you, about why some information is being withheld. So we're going to get into that in this timeline that I don't know how long it's going to take, but it's going to unfold as we begin the show today. And I'm going to start that in just a few minutes. But I thought it would be cool if we just kind of went through the timeline, because, you know, you get this information, the next day you get this information, and it's patchwork information. So let's put it all together with a consistent timeline, and let's see what happens. It all started with a party on Horn Island, and apparently that is a place to party. I have said many times, you know, when I was young, and also even as an adult, I have taken the excursion boat to Ship Island from the Gulfport Marina, and it's so much fun. I mean, I love it. Ship Island is great. Big concession stand there. I don't know if that's changed or not. It's been years since I did that, but if it's still going and you get a chance to do it, take the excursion ship with the kids, or if you're just a couple, just go by yourselves. And you know, you can go to the Gulf side, or you can stay on the Mississippi Sound side of Ship Island, and the Gulf side, the water's a lot prettier. The sound side is, you know, it's murky. It's murky, but it's still nice. So I've been out to Ship Island many times, but I never knew that people went to Horn Island because there's nothing there. And I guess that's why people go, because there's nothing there and they can all pull up in their boats and they can all have a great time. This information is taken from an article from WLOX, a station that's done a great job covering this. You know, usually on the Gulf Coast, WLOX, you know, doesn't have a story like this to cover the investigation into the death of an 18-year-old. Usually they're trying to, you know, cover stories and write reports about somebody whose fishing rod was stolen. So this is a big story for them, and they're really doing a great job. So the body of 18-year-old Nolan Xavier Wells was found in the water off Horn Island on the morning of July the 6th. He was reported missing the night of July 4th, after he didn't come back from a boating trip with friends. Now, the family has hired attorney Ben Crump. He is a civil rights attorney, and this was the first indication that for some reason the family thought that racism might be involved, because this is Benjamin Crump's area of expertise. Now, the hiring of Benjamin Crump has caused a lot of people to to want to bash the mother and bash the father, bash the family, you know, for bringing racism into this. And I think the family has a right to hire whoever they want to hire, and let's see where the information goes. So there were a lot of contradictions, and they needed an attorney, and they hired Ben Crump. If there is racism involved, he'll find it. Al Sharpton has become involved as well. Now, there were the results of an independent study, an independent autopsy that was commissioned by the family through Benjamin Crump. And they announced on July 22nd that there was no known cause for Nolan's death. It was an undetermined pending investigation. And the results of the original autopsy conducted by the Mississippi State Medical Examiner's Office has not yet been released. Now, last night, I looked up some information and found out that that these officials don't have to always wait to release information. They don't have to wait till it gets to a grand jury to release information. They can release some information before that does not jeopardize the case. So that makes it even curious as to why the Mississippi Medical Examiner's Office is not releasing this information. So let's go to Friday, July 3rd. Nolan's mother, Christine Wansley, said the last time she heard from Nolan was on July 3rd. He was going to a friend's house where they were going to spend the night. Saturday, July 4th, the 4th of July, 4th of July weekend. Nolan went to Horn Island with a group of friends. He's black. They were white. Does that matter? We don't know yet. But they were there to celebrate Independence Day. There were a lot of boats, a lot of people there. So the boat left a private dock in Ocean Springs at 9:56 in the morning. Nolan's friend, Warren Hudson, didn't go out on the boat with Nolan, but had conversations with him that day. And later, Warren Hudson told a podcaster that a large group of people left Ocean Springs on multiple boats, and they all headed out to Horn Island. There was a press conference with attorney Benjamin Crump, and it did mention video of an alleged argument that took place on the island, and this is circulating on social media. This is where Nolan could be heard saying, "Give me the freaking phone. What are you freaking doing?" Well, that has come into question, and I think they were again identifying this voice because of what other people said as the voice of Nolan. But on July 13th, Trayston Shepherd, a friend of Nolan's, came forward and told ABC that it was actually him that was yelling. It was Trayston Shepherd who was yelling and not Nolan Wells. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office, who's been deeply involved in this, has not confirmed the existence of any fight that took place on the island. Nolan was last seen near the island around 3 p.m. This is the afternoon of July 4th. Nolan's friends also say they last saw him about 3 o'clock. So what happened? On a podcast, The Officer Tatum Show, Warren Hudson said that Nolan chose to stay behind after the boat that he and others had taken to the island had started taking on water. This is something that I hadn't heard until I started going into this timeline. So the boat was taking on water, and they're calling up and they're saying, you know, our boat is taking on water. We got to try to save the boat, and so we need to leave. They needed to go, and Nolan decided to stay on the island with a girl that he was with at the time. Benjamin Crump said one contradiction was that the boys on the boat said that Nolan was going to stay and talk to a girl. But the girl said Nolan told her that he was going back on the boat. So somebody's not telling the truth here. Jackson County Sheriff John Ledbetter told ABC News that Nolan chose to stay on the island. But in a July 10th press conference, Nolan's parents, Christine and Elmore Wansley, they said they don't believe that Nolan would have voluntarily stayed because they always taught him to stay with the group. If you go with five, you come back with five. Do not separate from the group. Well, you know, we know that 18-year-olds don't always listen to, you know, the advice that parents give them. One of the teens on the boat that was taking on water called a private towing company, CETO, about 4 o'clock. And they said, we're at the west tip of Horn. Our bilge pump stopped working. We're sinking. Can you please come? So the teen said that there were 7 people aboard the boat. There was a dispatcher involved, and the dispatcher said, it sounds like a bunch of kids on board on Horn Island. And he was telling this captain, I guess of the sea tow company, he's saying the boat is sinking and he's on Horn Island. He's just a kid. There's a lot going on. The captain said that while on the phone, the owner of the boat told him that the teens did not need any help right now, but if something changes, he will call them back. The owner of the boat is presumably one of the parents of the kids who left the island in the boat because it was apparently sinking. The company CETO said it did not end up towing the boat. CETO said in a statement to NBC News that they asked for assistance to be rendered, but the owner of the boat advised CETO that they no longer needed help. So I think that was a very, very interesting thing. So information obtained from this is the Mississippi. What is it? I got to get the full name here because there's an acronym here. I want to make sure that I get this acronym right. This is for the, and this is used a lot. It's for the Mississippi State Medical Examiner's Office. And they confirmed that the boat left the island at 4:31 in the afternoon. The vessel was towed, but I'm not sure by whom, was towed approximately 2.75 miles, then it resumed normal operations. The boat had been traveling at about 34 knots at that point. Now, if you've got water in a boat, you can pull a plug. And if the boat is moving forward, the water in the boat will stream out of that hole. So, you know, maybe they needed help and then they didn't need help. So the boat got into a Fort Bayou about 5:52 in the afternoon, then returned to the dock at 6:06. The boat went to Fort Bayou, the boat launch, at 7:18 p.m., was taken out of the water and traveled over land to the owner's home in Biloxi. What happened on July 4th? His body was found in the water off Horn Island on July 6th, and there's a lot of questions to be answered about what Mississippi officials did and are doing, and really what happened to Nolan. How did he get in this situation? So on Thursday, July the 9th, the U.S. Coast Guard told WLOX on the Gulf Coast, and much of this information is coming from an article on WLOX on their website. A friend of Nolan's contacted the agency around 11 o'clock the night of July 4th, and the Coast Guard would not really talk about the information that they shared, but whatever was going on did not require Coast Guard assistance. Now, Christine, Nolan's mom, said that about 11:07 on that night, Thursday, July 4th, she got a call from Warren, one of Nolan's friends. She didn't go into any detail about what he said, but she then called her friend, whose two sons are friends with Nolan, and asked if they had seen him. They had not seen him. So then they tracked his phone, and they found that his phone was on land. So Nolan's missing, and his phone is not with him on the island. Around 11:49, the night of July 9th, it was reported that Nolan was missing. His mom called this in, said he's missing. She said that there was a lot of going back and forth. They talked to different agencies. There was a lot of confusion about who was in charge of what area. And late that night, Nolan's parents met with a deputy in the McDonald's parking lot and told them everything that they knew at that time. Now, that night, Christine, his mom's friend, went to go pick up Nolan's phone from Nolan's friend's house. And I guess this is one of the friends who left with the boat that was sinking. So she goes to this friend's house to pick up his phone. Nolan's father, Elmore, went to get the car keys and the car at another friend's house. And the parents say that there were problems getting these items back. So why weren't they just, in a very congenial way, given the keys and given the car and given the phone? So they get to Nolan's phone and they start going through it. And Christine said that she and her sister went through it. They found no photos and no videos on Nolan's Snapchat for that day. So this was a day of partying at Horn Island on July 4th. And they said that that was really strange because he was the kind of guy who would like do videos and he would post everything. So he posted nothing. So this led his mom, Christine, to believe that stuff had been deleted from the phones. That in the time that the friends or the parents of the friends had the phones, something might have been deleted. On Sunday, July 5th, about 1:38 in the morning, Mississippi officials spoke with the Ocean Springs Police Department and advised them that the Jackson County Sheriff's Office would be taking the lead in the case. Now, the Jackson County Sheriff's Office just informed the Mississippi officials that his deputies had spoken with several friends who had gone to the island on the boat with Nolan Wells, and that they left, and when they left, he was in the company of an unknown female, and that he chose to remain on the island. So now we've got Nolan breaking away from his friends. Their boat is sinking. They've got to get back to the coast shore and the marina and the boat launch. And then Nolan is still missing on the island. But the last that they know is that he said he wanted to stay and hang out with this girl and he was going to get a ride back. So here it is, the morning of July 5th. And Nolan's father went with Nolan's football coach in a boat. They went to Horn Island to search for the body or to search for him. Now, this article says to search for the body, but they might have been looking for him because the next day, you know, you could think that, you know, I mean, Horn Island's not that wide. It's not that long. It's not that big. But, you know, maybe somebody could have just, you know, fallen down for some reason and, you know, passed out and they might still be alive on the island. But they went there looking for Nolan Wells. So about 8 o'clock on the morning of the 5th, Mississippi officials sent out a patrol boat from the Biloxi Harbor, and they went to the northwest tip of Horn Island, which is apparently the last place where Nolan was. So they get close to the island, and there's another boat with people on it, there's no real significance of that yet. But records show that Mississippi officials launched 3 drones. They had no success finding Nolan or his body. Around 10:30 a.m., they requested more drones to be sent up, and they sent 2 more drones up, and they still didn't find anything. So on July 5th, around 11:55, close to noon, the Marine Patrol sergeant was asking Mississippi officials to find and interview multiple people that could possibly have been involved with this missing person on Horn Island. So they did the best they could. They found somebody who was on Horn Island on July 4th who knew Nolan but hadn't spoken to him in over a year. So they really, they were on July 4th. This person knew Nolan, but she was on a different island. So she was out there, but she wasn't on the same island. At 12:26, the Coast Guard in Mobile said it received a request for assistance from the Jackson County Sheriff's Office to search for a missing person around Horn Island. The Coast Guard said that there was an urgent marine information broadcast that was issued, and a helicopter was sent up to search the area. At 12:31 in the afternoon, the Jackson County Sheriff's Office issued a press release saying that the search for Nolan Wells was continuing, but they hadn't found him. Around 4:30 in the afternoon, they contacted his mother, and she had previously called the Sea Tow Company. She told an officer that her son had already spoken to the Jackson County Sheriff's Office earlier in the day. No, this was a mother of one of the teens who had previously called. Let me clear that up. So at 4:30 in the afternoon, Mississippi officials contacted the mother of one of the teens who was with Nolan, one of the teens who called Seto, because remember, the boat that they were in, the boat that Nolan had gone to Horn Island in, was taking on water, and the bilge pump wasn't working, and the boat was sinking. So there was cooperation there. The officer said that they had given consent to view the GPS on the boat. The officer observed the track lines showing that the boat was located on the northwest tip of Horn Island, the narrow part there. And that's where they were narrowing down the search to that area. And again, this information is coming from an article from WLOX, and it's a good timeline of what happened, and I wanted to share this with you today. So a number of different agencies, the Gulf Islands National Seashore, the U.S. National Park Service, the U.S. Coast Guard, Mississippi Department of Marine Resources, and the Mississippi Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks. These agencies and a few other agencies like the Biloxi Fire Department and the Harrison County Sheriff's Office all were involved, also the United Cajun Navy. That evening, they conducted sonar surveys of the northwest area of the island. The sonar surveys were not conclusive, and they determined that due to rough weather conditions, they were not going to be able to continue. So at 9:52 that night, Mississippi officials provided the following information to the Coast Guard. The date that he went missing, July 4th. The time, 6 p.m., was reported 6 p.m. The location, this northwest area of Horn Island. The subject, male, black, 6'1", 180 pounds. Food intake, unknown. Alcohol intake, heavy. Clothing, shorts only. Heavy alcohol intake. Now, did that play a part in this? So, Monday, July the 6th, the United Cajun Navy aircraft went in the air just before 6 a.m. Monday morning, and search boats were out there again looking for the body. Around 8:45 on the morning of Monday, July the 6th, Sheriff Ledbetter of the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department confirmed authorities that they had gotten a call of a reported body found on the northwest tip of Horn Island. The body was discovered by a U.S. Park Service ranger. About 11 a.m., the body was taken to the coroner's office in Pascagoula. Just before 1 p.m., Nolan's family confirmed his death on social media. And, you know, you can just imagine how the parents feel at this point, because their son was missing for 2 days and they didn't know where he was. They don't know what happened to him. And they're trying to get answers, but even this early in all of this, they don't seem to be getting a fluid flow of information from Mississippi officials. So when we come back, we're going to take you to Tuesday, July 7th, the day after the body was discovered, and we'll pick up the timeline of the investigation into Nolan Wells from that point on. If you want to join us with a comment this afternoon, the Oakenheart Jewelers Talk and Text line is 504-260-1870. As you hear this, what questions come to mind? And I guess we can speculate on what we think happened, but it's just going to be speculation. It's just going to be theories. But what question do you have? And I'm going to share with you the questions that I wanted to ask WLOX, but I understand why they might not want to come on our station and talk about this, because this is their baby. On Tuesday, July 7th at 2 p.m., the family retained national renowned civil rights and personal injury attorney Ben Crump, and they were calling for transparency and an investigation into why and how Nolan died. Nolan's autopsy took place Tuesday at the Mississippi State Medical Examiner's Office Coast Lab. At 2 p.m. Tuesday, Coroner Bruce Lynn confirmed to WLOX News that the body found was that of Nolan Wells. Just after 3:30, The Jefferson County Sheriff's Office issued a press release asking anyone that had photos or videos or saw Nolan Wells or talked to him, if they noticed anything unusual, there were numbers for them to contact. So Tuesday evening at 9 p.m., Warren Hudson's stepmom, Ashley Cole. Now, Warren Hudson was a friend of Nolan Wells. Ashley Cole put up a Facebook post, and she said that the family is grieving with Nolan's family and that they want to do all they can to dispel rumors with facts. So Ashley Cole said that she initially deactivated her Facebook account out of fear for safety for her and her family. She said, "We did not believe that it was inappropriate for our minor children's photographs to be circulated throughout the internet, presenting potential threats for their safety." Why were they so concerned about their safety? Well, there have been threats, and people have been arrested for threatening Mississippi officials, and that should not happen. You know, that's stupid. You're not supposed to do that. And there have been threats against the families of the friends and people who knew Nolan Wells, and it's absurd. So Cole said that her son Warren last saw Nolan around 3 p.m. on July 4th. So this seems to be coming up consistently. The last time Nolan Wells was seen was about 3 p.m. on July 4th, before they left the island about 4:30, when the boat had a water issue. The boat was taking on water. The bilge pump wasn't working. Cole posted, Nolan made a decision to stay on the island and return inland later with another group of friends. She said that her son has fully cooperated with law enforcement. The NAACP is going to apparently get involved in this. This is from the president in Mississippi, Curly Clark, but they don't want anybody to jump to any conclusions before the facts are known. So the NAACP is saying don't jump to conclusions until the facts are known. And I know it's difficult not to. So on Wednesday, July 8th, Benjamin Crump said that Nolan's body was going to be flown to Washington, D.C. for an independent autopsy. Now, the investigators conducted interviews with witnesses, but there doesn't seem to be any concrete information that's been released. On July the 8th, around 4:09 in the afternoon, a Jackson County captain requested the GPS file download assistance from Mississippi officials, and they reportedly got information on this boat that was sinking. That boat was registered to a friend who Warren Hudson said on a podcast helped them when the boat was taking on water. The 21-year-old owner signed permission for Mississippi officials to search and brought the investigator to the boat. The investigator then obtained the data. At 5:10 in the afternoon, the captain went to go meet with the family members of the teen in the boat that had been reported to be sinking. They gave permission for the boat to be searched, and they gathered GPS information. On Thursday, July 9th, Attorney Benjamin Crump sent out a press release and said that in New York City, there was going to be this autopsy, and there was going to be a full press conference in New York about this. And so on the night of July 9th, Ashley Cole made another Facebook post revealing that she and her family were receiving numerous death threats online, posting screenshots of those threats. And in one Facebook post, Cole said that her family had not even had the opportunity to talk to the Nolan Wells' parents and their attorney. On Friday, July the 10th, Nolan's parents spoke to Good Morning America along with Crump. And at this point, this was a national story. And when more information comes out, it will continue to be a national story. On Sunday, July the 12th, Nolan's mother, Christine, called for anyone that had information, photos, videos, anything about him on Horn Island to please come forward with that information. On Monday, July 13th, on Good Morning America, Trayston Shepherd, a friend of Nolan Wells, talked about a viral video that had been studied by investigators. And a lot of people were concerned that the video showed Nolan in a confrontation. But Trayston Shepherd said that that was not the case. On Tuesday, July 14th, there was another conversation with the Mississippi Gulf Coast Coliseum officials about funeral services, and there was talk about the funeral services, and then that ultimately happened. District Attorney Angel Myers, I think this is pronounced McElreth, something like that. The DA told ABC News that they would eventually decide whether the 18-year-old's death was a prosecutionable case. Well, it turned out to be, yes, it is a case that can be prosecuted. And so on Wednesday, July 15th, Nolan's phone, which the team had possession of, was investigated. They were going to conduct some kind of a search of all of that, but it really didn't provide a timeline for the release of the independent autopsy results. And at a news conference, a reporter asked about an image of an alleged pool party circulating online that Crump's page had shared on Instagram. Benjamin Crump and his team said that was really they seemed to suggest that this was a current picture, but it turned out that it wasn't. That picture was taken before July 4th. It happened in a pool. And Trayston Shepherd, Nolan's friend, told Rolling Stone magazine that pool party took place on Saturday, June 27th, before the 4th of July. So they made it seem like that the pool party was, you know, in context with the death, and it really wasn't. The FBI told ABC that it was working to kind of figure out the interstate threats that were taking place against individuals in this whole case. And again, you know, these individual threats, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to threaten to kill somebody? You know, you're so upset that somebody has died, and you want the truth, and you threaten to kill somebody? Death threats come from nonsensical minds. They come from bitter, belligerent, evil, angry people who don't know the truth, and they just want to vent and get back at somebody. And death threats are stupid. And some of these people are in jail. Still a lot of questions to be asked. A lot of answers need to be released. And they're not coming out. And it's just so suspicious when Mississippi officials don't release information as quickly as they should. This is my opinion. Now, they have said that they're not releasing certain information because they have to protect the information, the evidence, before it gets to a grand jury. Well, I read last night that they don't really have to do that, that there's some information that can be released before the evidence goes to the grand jury. So it seems to me that the Jackson County Sheriff's Office is withholding information. Again, that's the impression I get from the reports that are out there. If that's not true, then, you know, the Jackson County Sheriff's Office can call us back because we put in calls to them. So now we're at Monday, July 20th, and this was the funeral day for Nolan Wells. On Wednesday, July 22nd, on a podcast, his friend Warren Hudson again said that Nolan decided to stay behind after the boat that he took to Horn Island began to take on water. And so they were headed back. He decided to stay on the island. So on July 22nd, this information came out again, just reinforcing that he decided to stay on the island. And there didn't seem to be anything that indicated there was any kind of confrontation. So what happened? Well, that's what we don't know. So Benjamin Crump, the attorney for the mother and father, said that a second autopsy was conducted, but the body was decomposed because it had spent 2 days in the water. And the second autopsy concluded nothing. It was inconclusive. They could not even tell if there were bruises or abrasions on the body, but Benjamin Crump did say there was a 12 by 8 inch area of red decoloration in soft tissue on the back of Nolan's neck. Well, what was that about? Benjamin Crump also said that some of the organs were missing, for the second autopsy, but he said that's not that unusual when autopsies are done. And one thing that they couldn't do was determine anything about the airway, because apparently the throat was missing, and they could not tell if there was water in the airway, or they could not tell anything about the stomach. And, you know, where's the toxicology report? So, you know, a lot of stuff, again, is not being released, and it seems like it doesn't legally have to be that way. Now, the office of D.A. McElrath confirmed that the state, and this is on Thursday, July 23rd, confirmed that the state of Mississippi's autopsy was going to be turned over to the grand jury, and that information was going to be withheld. And she said that every death in the county, except for those of natural causes and those that are not the result of criminal activity or, you know, if it's just a basic car accident, the information is held held until the grand jury gets the information. So the DA said that the public interest in the case is understandable, but she said that we just need to do the best we can to find the truth. And I really, truly hope that's what they're doing. There are just some suspicious things about this, but I hope that that's what Mississippi officials are indeed doing. So on Wednesday, July 29th, the family of Bart Edmondson Jr. released a statement. This was through their attorney. And it said that they were going to seek legal recourse against the people who were going online on social media making false accusations about Edmondson Jr. In terms of being a suspect in Wells's death, or that he somehow contributed to Wells' death or was involved in the cover-up of Wells' death. So the Edmondson said that their son took his boat to Horn Island and brought it back, and it was that simple. And then the Edmondson said that their son has been very, very open with the authorities. They allowed their boat, the GPS device, to be inspected, and this was without lawyers being present. And they issued a statement, and you know, so this was all something that simply seemed up on the level. On Thursday, July 30th, the question was, why was Wells's body found in the same location where it was last seen? And I guess they're questioning, well, it's really unusual that if he was seen last at this point, why was his body found at that same point? Because it seems like that if he left and went off on his own or went off with this girl, that it might have been somewhere else. But again, I don't know. That's just a question, that he disappeared and his body was found in the same place and nobody seems to know anything about it. Benjamin Crump also said that they had the audio of a phone call that was made by one of the teens on the boat that was taking on water to Sea Tow, a company that tows boats, and said that they were working with an expert to determine if that was a real call, and to just go over the call in general. I mentioned earlier that one of the fathers, I think, of one of the kids who left in the boat called Sea Tow and said they didn't need help. And just so there's a little confusion in my mind about all of that. But here's the contact number for the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office if you have any information. It's 228-769-3063. The number for the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office, 228-769-3063. And, you know, that concludes this. I want to add this to it. Christine, Nolan Wells' mom, has had her license challenged. I think she's a nurse. Has had her license challenged out of nowhere. She's had her license challenged. She's apparently had this impeccable career, and suddenly now her license was challenged. I think everything turned out okay, but why was her license suddenly challenged? I mean, why did that happen? I mean, was that some kind of retaliation against her? And why? I mean, this woman didn't do anything wrong. The only thing she did was lose a son. And some people aren't happy that she hired Benjamin Crump, but so what? She has a right to hire Benjamin Crump. And hiring Benjamin Crump doesn't mean that it's racism. But he's looking into that possibility. After we've gone through this timeline, what question still lurks in your mind? What question do you have about this case? I think the biggest questions for me surround 3 o'clock in the afternoon on July 4th when Nolan Wells disappeared. You know, you just don't walk off the face of the earth. Because contrary to what many people believe, the earth is not flat. And you don't just walk off the end of an island and you disappear. So what happened? Somebody had to see him after 3 o'clock. Well, one would think. I mean, Horn Island's not that big. Would it be big enough for somebody to go off and stumble and fall behind? I don't know. Is there a slight dune there or something? I think so. But I've never been to Horn Island. But there might have been some dune or something. So did he trip? What was he doing? And how did he get back in the water? And what happened? And what happened to the girl? I mean, I haven't heard any information about this girl that he apparently stayed behind to talk to. I still think it's curious that the Mississippi officials are not releasing some of the information that it seems like they could legally release even before it gets to a grand jury, but they're not. So my biggest question is, what happened after 3 o'clock? And did anybody see what happened after 3 o'clock? And then he went all July 5th missing. If he was last seen at the northwest corner of Horn Island, which would be if you are looking from the beach, if you're looking from the Gulf Coast, if you're looking from Highway 90 out onto the Mississippi Sound, it would be the northwest corner would be the Mississippi Sound side and the right side of Horn Island. So if that's where he disappeared, is it interesting that his body was found in the same spot? There's a lot of questions and there's a lot of suspicion here, and rightfully so. I don't know how this is going to turn out, but we'll continue to follow the story and bring it to you as honestly and as best we can. And thanks to WLOX, they're doing an excellent job covering this story. We did reach out to the lead reporter, and he wasn't able to talk to us. So, you know, I don't know if he was told not to talk to us or if he just wasn't comfortable talking to us. So, you know, I'm not sure. But in any event, he was not able to talk, and we can just leave it at that.
Scoot will be keeping an ear on this case, so stay tuned to these True Crime Roundups for updates. Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to KNX News in Los Angeles, WBBM News Radio in Chicago, KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, KMOX in St. Louis, Marty Griffin out of KDKA Radio in Pittsburgh, A New Morning out of WBEN News and Talk in Buffalo, and Scoot out of WWL in New Orleans. You can find these programs on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. You can find these True Crime Roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app, or wherever you find your podcasts.